That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to news from the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and Bear Butte in the Black Hills. Our contributors this week included Justin Lipson of Windham, Maine for WBAI in New York. Production assistance came from Priya Reddy of WBAI in New York and William Underbaggage from the Indigenous Nations Network. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was Justin Lipson. I am Justin Lipson in New York. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. And welcome to another edition of Bathurst Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is a two-hour show concerned with a lot of local stuff and the occasional jump abroad to a nearby city. In fact, we're going to begin the show by hearing another interview with and a few poems from Berkeley poet Julia Vinograd, whose books can be found in the Santa Cruz Public Library main branch. You can also read her stuff in Street Spirit, the new issue of which should be hitting the library tomorrow. Street Spirit is a homeless publication. It is sold locally. If you're a homeless person or you're a low-income person, you can sell it for money if you need to. And you can do that by getting in touch with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activist Thomas Levitt at 295-3917. Give him a call if you're interested in selling Street Spirit. You can also go by 916 Soquel Avenue, apartment B, and pick up some copies of Street Spirit, 916 Soquel Avenue, Apartment B. Hoping to put that on the new Huffline message as soon as I get it together to do a new Huffline message. The Huffline is the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group concerned with civil rights in Santa Cruz or the lack thereof, and specifically laws that criminalize poor people downtown at night, actually 24 hours a day, depending on the whims and vagaries of the merchants and police officers and hosts and people in authority on the beat. Homeless people, for example, have no right to sleep at night. There is no legal space for a homeless person to sleep at night in Santa Cruz, with the exception of 42 people who get into the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's Rotating Church Sleep on the Floor program, which only operates for those 42 and denies the other, well, there are 1,500 to 2,000 people in the city limits who are homeless. So you can figure how many people don't get into these programs and face a $90 fine, a $90 bail, if that's what they pay for to bail the ticket, and have to do at least 8 hours of community service for the privilege of sleeping one night. Anyway, you can call into the show if you've got commentary or thoughts, if you've got objections or criticisms, if you've got questions. The phone number here is 831-427-3772. 427-FRSC. This is freakradio.org, also known as freeradio.org, sometimes friendlyradio.org, and sometimes perhaps not so friendlyradio.org, but don't be intimidated. Speak your mind, even if it hurts, and even if your voice squeaks, as the Grey Panthers used to say. And again, the number, 427-3772. If you want to call the station as voicemail and get information about the actual running of the station, or you want to apply for a spot because you've got stuff you want to put out to the community, or you have a public service announcement, or you have something to pass on to us, that number is 427-4523, 427-4523. Go online at freakradio.org, and you can download an application and find out what's cooking. And we will consider your application, or at least some of the folks in the collective who do that job will. And I think there's some spots open. So, hey, you want to go on the air? Here's your chance. Particularly, I'm interested in the people who want to go on the air or interested in doing homeless civil rights issues and local news. I take up more than my share of time with that, it seems, and I'd like to have somebody else pick up on that subject. I think it would be great to get another voice and another perspective. So, again, you can call me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Leave me a number or a contact point, and I'll try to get back to you. You should also call if you see instances of harassment or discrimination against poor and homeless people, or instances of police misconduct or abuse. We don't have a police review board in town anymore. Not that it made a hell of a lot of difference when we did, but it made, well, it provided a forum of one kind or another. Now that even that is gone, you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you want to report things that you think should be of concern or that you are concerned about and you want the public to know about. And you can come to a Huff meeting, too. Huff meets every Wednesday from 9:30 in the morning to 11:30 in the morning, and that's at the county building at 701 Ocean Street, right between the county building and the courthouse in the breezeway, where it's half in the sun, half in the shade, and we welcome folks to come down, homeless, housed, or somewhere in between. Going first to Berkeley. Berkeley is a town I go to regularly. It's sentimental fondness for me. It's also got People's Park, and it's got the Mediterranean Cafe, which is where I ran into poet Julia Vinograd and talked to her about the closing of Cody's bookstore across the street. We talked a bit about that and other issues on Telegraph Avenue, where there's the usual gentrification push by some business groups, some merchants, police agencies. You'll be seeing the same thing. Of course, we have seen the same thing in Santa Cruz. So here's some commentary and some poetry from Julia Vinograd.
...355 on a hot July 18th up Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley at the Mediterranean, which is under Craig's new management. And I'm sitting at one of the tables, actually the table I usually sit at, with poet Julia Vinograd, a Berkeley fixture, we might say. You're sipping on a rather orange-looking mango smoothie.
Yes, he got it for me. That's
yes,
great.
So there. See, I'm paying her off, so don't believe anything she says. So, first of all, on the political scene, we've Cody's from across the street has closed up shop. Any comments on that?
Well, it'll be missed. It's
Andy Ross be missed?
Oh, look, I'm not sure we would have accepted anybody after Fred. Fred was just about perfect. But, no, it wasn't anywhere near the same.
Fred, of course, was the original owner of Cody's with his partner, and
yeah.
Pat, who's still around, right?
Well, Pat is. Fred died.
Mm-hmm.
And
Ross took over.
Yeah. It was, when Fred ran it, it was a hell of a lot more than a bookstore. He opened the space in front of his store to the vendors before any of the other people did. He was so popular with everybody on the street that when the riots happened, it was the only shop in town that never boarded up and where there was never a rock through all that glass.
Even the enraged merchants nearby refused to vandalize his store.
I didn't ask about that. Mm.
So, when Ross took over, of course, there was some concern that he was involved with the social cleansing of Telegraph Avenue.
I don't think he ever really understood it. He would have done okay in Northside. He tried to treat it as if it was Northside, and it's not. And furthermore, it shouldn't be. Northside is perfectly okay for Northside. But, you know, he meant well, I guess, but he's just happier in those two silly new stores he opened, you know, Fufu Rich Districts.
Down on 4th Avenue or Fifth Street?
Yeah, they're making it into a gourmet ghetto in some fashionable place in San Francisco. You know, places you know, I couldn't go into without having the people around them look at me suspiciously.
Well, your weird and proud button
yes.
says it all, right?
Yes.
Now, what about the plan to pump extra money into cleaning up and building up the Telegraph Avenue area? Is that another one of them get rid of the riffraff schemes, or is there some other element involved?
Well, if they really want to make Telegraph better, they ought to schedule more music festivals, you know, more vendor festivals, maybe even an occasional book festival. Those aren't all that. Those draw that many people. Don't try and get rid of Telegraph's character. That's what brings the tourists.
What about poetry festivals?
Well, they usually bring only other poets.
Now, when are you going to write your first sonnet? That's what I want to know, Vinaigrette.
Yuck.
Now, come on. Shakespeare did it. You can do it, too.
Well, I've done a couple of ballads, but I don't do sonnets.
Not iambic pentameter?
Well,
but you do have some off-the-cuff works you just happen to have brought in your briefcase.
Well, stop it for a sec while I look.
She's going to go check it out.
Well,
we found three poems here. I'm going to let you choose the order. It looks like these are hot off the press, or at least as yet uncollected in any of your, what, 45 volumes of poetry?
Well, this is called The Giant Rat, and I did it when they were having a strike at the Honda factory, and they had this marvelous, huge, giant rat in front of the place. So I wrote it a poem. There's a huge gray rubber rat, almost as tall as the corner business, where a bitter strike has been going on for months. The rat's reared up till the roof looks like his hat, and there's a boycott sign strung around his neck to tell the world. I want that rat. He's the most beautiful giant gray rubber rat I've ever seen. He's the only giant gray rubber rat I've ever seen. I'd steal him, but he wouldn't fit in my room. Two white buck teeth, each as big as a fist, white paws with painted claws, and angry red eyes. Do they glow in the dark? He's already part of directions. Take the bus to the giant rat, cross the street, and the art store is half a block down. But the giant rat isn't there on weekends, just chanting strangers with picket signs who seem perfectly nice. But I don't want to steal them. Where's my rat? Then I decided everyone else is in church, so the giant rat's being worshipped in the great church of garbage by rat finks and rat bikes, where the moon really is green cheese. And where the giant rat still proudly wears his sign. This world may be good enough for broken-minded, compromising people, but it's not good enough for rats, and he's boycotting God.
And the name of that poem is?
The Giant Rat.
Indeed. Number two.
Yeah. I was even sorry when the strike ended, although I was pleased that the workers won, because the rat was gone and I'll never see it again.
Where was this?
The Honda thing down on Chattuck. It was a long strike. This one's more contemporary. Children playing jump rope with Jerusalem's hair. Jerusalem lies on her side, leaning her head on one soft hand, letting children play jump rope with her long, dark hair. Jerusalem sees through living children and dead children to bombs falling like burning angels on both sides of her border. But Jerusalem only listens to jump rope rhymes. Children chant kisses up a tree, or how many guns burst into blossom, and keep your toes together, and if you stop, you lose your turn. None of the children look at Jerusalem, but her eyes rest on their sharp little elbows and bouncing knees, as if she were playing spin the bottle with them, as if she could still play, as if bottles weren't being turned into hand grenades. Jump rope spin, and children count hoit. Soldiers, this is war, and if you stop, you lose your turn. Jerusalem's shining hair twists into a noose to hang the sun for the unforgivable sin of seeing her like this. Children's jump ropes count love letters they're way too young for, so they put the letters in cracks in the wailing wall or wrapped around a stone to throw, and spend the cost of a stamp on money. Spend the cost of a stamp on candy, but this is love. And if you stop, you lose your turn. Jerusalem feels the tug on her hair, and suddenly it's too much. She pulls her hair away and strokes it like wounded wings. The children can't see Jerusalem, so for a moment she can't see herself. The jump ropes rhymes unravel, but the children don't care. They race home for dinner, the living and the dead, arguing who won.
The name of that is?
Children playing jump rope with Jerusalem's hair.
And finally, poem number three.
Yeah. It's just been tearing me up, all that stuff that's happening in the East.
The invasion of Lebanon.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this is another war one. It's called the Son of War. When they crucified the Son of War, they stripped off his uniform and nailed him to the naked back of Mary Magdalene, standing upright with slender, outspread arms. Mary Magdalene sings the same song she'd sung the troops whenever they marched past her window, her full breast spilling from her red dress. The Son of War knew it all too well. When they crucified the Son of War, his hands were naked of weapons, much worse than his naked body. He could almost hear his sergeant giving him a dressing down in front of his unit while he tries to stand at attention with Mary Magdalene's noble and familiar rump rubbing warmly against his own. Soldier, you think that machine gun your government paid for is like your glasses or your car key, and there'll be a lost and found desk in the middle of the next battle? Soldier, you're an insult to your country. Without your weapon, you don't exist. I'm staring right at you, soldier, and nobody's there. The Son of War tries to squirm with shame, but the nails hold him still. When they crucified the Son of War, a rose vine grew from his spilled blood, wrapping around both bodies. Thorns and scented petals press into every inch of Mary Magdalene and the Son of War. When the roses open, there are faces inside, the Son of War's dead buddies. One of the roses stunk of beer farts and dirty jokes, and the girl back home in a pale pink rose spits at Mary Magdalene. Mary laughs. When they crucified the Son of War, the heavens opened for him, but all the saints were singing Mary Magdalene's song, and saints shouldn't even know such words, much less sing them. When they crucified the Son of War, he turned away from heaven, looking for a place where he belonged. It had been so long he'd forgotten the words, but he was looking for a place of peace.
The Son of War.
The Son of War.
And we're listening to three poems by Julia Vinograd and a pungent political analysis. Any final remark?
I don't think of it as a pungent political analysis. It hurts, is all.
Thank you.
And that was Julia up in Berkeley. You can go online, Vinograd, V-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, and look for her poems if you like them. I do, particularly her poems about life on the streets. She's written 45 or so books. So you might want to give that a try. I think the library, the Central Library, has 3 books of hers. I've suggested, because she's a California poet, that they get all 45 of her books. But I think in the last 5 years, her book's been taken out twice or something. So she's not a big popular sell here in Santa Cruz, just with certain aficionados like myself who keep buying, collecting, and even reading her stuff. You're tuned to Free Radio, www.freakradio.org, at 101.1 FM. We stream, we broadcast, and we do whatever we can, hopefully with some input from all of you out there. The phone number to call is 427-3772. And, hey, I may have a special in-studio guest coming in very shortly. In fact, she may even be here, but I will have to first... tickle her into talking. We'll see if that actually works. She's shaking her head, backing away toward the door, and hefting a little bottle of gin there. I don't want it to... actually, it looks like water. I don't think it's actually gin. But you can call in, you can talk with me, and who knows, you might even be able to guess the identity of the mystery guest. Who knows? It's not Mike Rotkin or Cynthia Matthews. I can guarantee you that. For those of you who missed it, the Rotkin interview that we did on Sunday has been... archived, and if you want to go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org, you can download it and hear it, and we can weep because we didn't really give Rotkin the grilling, at least from my perspective, that we hope to do, but we're going to be following up on that. The issue, of course, was City Attorney John Barisone, the endless city attorney for life that we've had as city attorney for 2 decades now, nearly. We have I guess our studio guest is willing to suddenly speak up. Now, why don't you sign in, studio guest? What is your name?
My name is Linda.
You are, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, Linda Lemaster.
Linda Lemaster.
Co-founder of Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
The one-time chair of the now-defunct Homeless Icky Task Force, or I'm sorry, the Homeless Issues Task Force.
The latter, yes.
And, you know, you suddenly came to life when I mentioned the name of your old friend, John Barisone. What prompted you to want it? What do you want to have to say about
it? I don't think it's appropriate for you to call him my friend, or either of us old, even if we are.
I see. Well, you know, we're all getting older.
I read today's paper, and it frustrated me. I read about now the city doesn't know what to do, is implied, because Barisone's office sent them a letter about... what if the conservatives won after the pot thing goes on the initiative? I guess that's the theme.
Yeah, we actually talked about the marijuana ballot initiative, which I've denounced it for months as being sort of inadequate and partial. And
so you and Barisone are together on this one, huh?
Well, not really. I'd say we're on different sides of the political spectrum. I've got nothing against the marijuana initiative. I just would like to see... I would have liked to have seen the people go to the city council and demand that they vote it as an ordinance. Because all it does is it makes marijuana enforcement the lowest priority, which doesn't mean much unless it's carefully monitored and hooked up with some sanctions. And I guess Berkeley had a similar law. Oakland has had a similar law to no great effect. You may remember last year the Office of Compassionate Youths was established by Mike Rotkin. But, of course, it won't come into play until the Supreme Court says it's all okay. Actually, that rhymes. I guess I should be a poet.
Nice.
Too.
Do a little rap. They need it. The city needs it. I'm not really trying to comment on my pro-hemp and medical marijuana preferences socially, even though it's very important. What I'm trying to say is Barisone sending this letter to the city and it getting front page headlines is kind of kinky or weird. It's just weird.
You have Shanna Banana McCord of the Sentinel, as I call her. She never saw a police officer she didn't believe, apparently, or a city attorney or a city council member that she didn't give, you know, extreme amounts of newspaper space to. She doesn't really. I mean, she's as deep as a don't know what you call it, a thimble. It's hard to describe her depth of coverage in these papers. I mean, she's a nice person.
Shanna wrote that article that was on the front page today.
Shanna.
Mike, you know, I don't really want to praise the Sentinel any more than I did when the McPhersons owned it, although I read it. But my point is about Veresone's office being used for this political bias instead of being used for legal advice. I mean, I don't think his letter was about legal advice as represented in the paper.
Well, the letter, of course, and we talked about it last Sunday, I believe. I guess Thomas Levitt had a lot to say about it, who he does the show right before mine, The Wake Up Call. And we actually we read through some of the letter and talked about it. The letter was a response to a conservative critic at the city council who demanded to know how much it would cost the city to defend. And actually, I don't know if he asked that question particularly, but he raised general issues around, you know, having to defend this measure if it was unconstitutional, and is this a waste of the taxpayers' money, and so forth. And in response to this, instead of saying, you know, grow up and join the 21st century, and we'll vote this thing in without even putting it on the ballot, because that's all they need to do is vote 4-3 that this is an ordinance, and that'll be that. And there'll be no further discussion. I mean, they'll have to do it twice.
Yeah, but the city attorney is not the popular daily paper. I think there was a lack of balance in his response. He works for the legal authority of the city council.
I'm talking about the city council. I'm not talking about the city attorney. The city council had the power when this matter came up. Actually, before it came up, but particularly when it came up, and it still does on the 25th of July, which is, I guess, next Tuesday.
So you're so concerned about the council that you don't care about the
legal advice? I'm concerned about the bad legal advice, but I'm even more concerned about the bad city council political activity, because the political activity actually comes up for a vote. Veresone will never come up for a vote.
Yeah,
I mean, that's for sure.
I was told that.
We saw his contract rubber stamped year after year. We saw it happen again on July 11th, I guess. And we talked about that. You heard me and, I guess, Bernard Klitzner, if you were listening on Sunday, talk about that issue at the city council when we discussed it on Tuesday. And, you know, Rotkin defended Veresone, and he's actually he's going to have a further interview with Thomas Levitt on the issue and has agreed to be reached at his home. You can call the fine shadow mayor at home. He's not the real mayor. The real mayor is the real mayor, in fact. But the titular mayor, and that's not a commentary about a person's physical appearance, is Cynthia Matthews, who's, hard to imagine her making a move without looking in Mike Rotkin's direction. No offense, Cynthia, that's my impression of you. And she's, of course, in her own way, she's worse than Rotkin, because she's so beholden to downtown interests and the police, and so conservative in her manner, and yet she wears this progressive label. Anyway, she and Rotkin are both coming up for re-election, and they could, as I said, on the 25th, vote in the entire initiative, regardless of what Veresone says, along with two other council members, by a 4-3 vote.
Doesn't sound like they intend to take a stand on anything.
Right, and I doubt they'll take a stand on it. Instead, they'll simply put it on the ballot, and the voters will vote it in. And
spending
this is,
more money because they don't know how to do their
and
job,
wasting
which
more,
is pay attention.
Wasting more time and allowing the police more leeway to harass people for small quantities of marijuana, as they continue to do. For example, two homeless people recently got ticketed for recreational smoking of marijuana and possession of marijuana. And I don't know if they were on private property or if they were, you know, snuck away in a secret part of the mall somewhere, or where they were off in the bushes. That's one of the problems of this initiative. It attempts to do the, you know, you should be on private property. And then, you know, it only applies to adults and so forth. I mean, I don't think giving copious quantities of any drug to young people is a particularly good idea. But I think that playing into the marijuana paranoia and hysteria, which has been, you know, the prevailing ignorance in this country, institutionalized ignorance, and worse, Democratic Party hacks and Green Party gurus who make it onto council like Fitzmaurice, don't say anything about this and don't stand up for the rights of people to resist this crazy drug war, which has all kinds of casualties in this county. You know, I mean,
well, if we can't roll back this nonsense about just this one little thing about whether the people have a right to have their council say to the police, we have some priorities locally. I mean, if that's a public struggle, then they need to lose that.
Well, it's not really a public struggle. It's just it's going to be it will be passed, I believe, pretty overwhelmingly, and it won't be challenged in court by the city council. That depends, I suppose, if we got some more militant anti-drug people on the council. But they're all pretty anti-drug anyway, in the sense.
And they're all very easy to pressure if there's 50 or 100 of you.
Maybe, although it's hard to. I mean, we've seen people try to pressure them to get resolutions against of selective enforcement by the police, racial profiling, against spying on peaceful political activity, and that pressure doesn't seem to work. By the way, on Monday, you may not know this, Linda, there's going to be a meeting of the Public Safety Committee, and that is the subcommittee that Mike Rodkin himself heads, which essentially gives the imprimatur of respectability and acceptability to the police department, no matter what it does, no matter how many people it spies on, no matter how flagrantly it bungles and assigns the very spy masters to the investigation. That was, of course, Deputy Chief Vogel. No matter how corruptly the city attorney ratifies all this shit, and no matter how meaningless, usually, the police auditor, Bob Aronson, who was, in this case, he made a rather obvious call that you can't investigate yourself on the first night DIY investigation where the undercover police went in and snooped around heavily against, a bunch of people who were just planning a peaceful protest. And actually, it was a community event. It wasn't even a protest. It was a merry New Year's Eve event that went off very well.
So they made their social plans based on a bad memory from years ago, I suppose.
Well, anyway, the issue is coming up on Monday at 4 o'clock at the Public Safety Committee meeting at City Council, either in the chambers or in the little teeny room behind the chambers, which they sometimes use and then say, we have no recording equipment, so we can't really record our permanent committee meetings, which is to me, unheard of. You keep records and minutes of these meetings, and you have recordings of them for people who want to hear them, but apparently not in Santa Cruz, not unless Mike Rodkin makes a special exception. You want Mike to record this Public Safety Committee meeting because at the same time there's going to be a meeting which Cynthia Matthews will attend at the Community Police Department room at the police department on the shootings in the Beach Flats. So that's going to be happening at the same time. You can't go to both unless you're really astrally projected. So, they obviously should be recorded if people want to follow either of them or both of them.
People are obliged, like Cynthia, to follow them, too. I mean, how could they?
Oh, Cynthia would leave it to Mike, I think. That's my suspicion.
So, is this city's committee still composed only of council members elected?
Oh, of course. It's got Coonerty, Rodkin, and Jovial Ed Porter, the man who gave us the latest version of the downtown ordinances. Remember Jovial Ed?
Jovial Ed.
Yes. And that's coming up on, 4 o'clock on Monday at City Hall. For those of you who want to watch them rubber stamp Chief Scary's guidelines, which he implemented through Matthews without any kind of public process. There was a series of private meetings, of which I think Mark Schlossberg of the ACLU and Bob Aronson were at. Schlossberg was at one of them, and he was also informed of another by email. Two of them were canceled, and, of course, the police department's own version of its own surveillance guidelines came out many months after the issue had actually been brought to the city council by an angry gang of activists who said, what the hell are you doing letting the police department... And we saw this actually in the newspaper today. There was even Representative Farr was a bit scandalized at the Pentagon's Homeland Security, sniffing into student protests at UCSC. But not our own Mayor Matthews or our shadow Mayor Rodkin. They're content to let Chief Scary do his own thing.
Well, they may be appalled, but the paper didn't see it as news. I don't know.
Problem with what?
It wasn't seen by the newspaper as a news.
What's not seen by the newspaper as news?
If somebody at the city council level was appalled.
I'm sorry, run that by me again, Linda.
You noted that Sam Farr's reaction to this was in the paper, but the mayor and the shadow mayor weren't.
No, I noted.
Saying,
I noted.
Well,
that's not what I noted.
Because he's supposed to be in charge of that.
You misunderstand, Linda. Farr's reaction to UCSC spying by the Homeland Security was in the news.
Right.
There was no reaction from Rotkin and Matthews to Santa Cruz Police Department spying on our own peaceful protest downtown. That is to say, the departments over which the City Council has some power, the police department, they're not going to exercise it. They're going to allow the city manager and the city attorney to do their usual managerial approach.
I see.
At least that's my
Somebody else has the purse strings, apparently.
But are there no defenders of John Barisoni and the Santa Cruz Police Department in our audience? Now, come on. Are you going to allow us to badmouth these fine city officials without some kind of response? Phone number here is 427-3772. So give us a call in.
I don't think the whole police department's bad. You were just talking about the chief, and I haven't met that person personally yet.
Well, I'm talking about Howard Scarry, the chief. I'm talking about Deputy Chief Vogel. I'm talking about, I don't know, is it Vice Chief Sapone? I'm not sure if it's a vice chief or a deputy chief. A lot of vice going on here. We have a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Linda and Robert.
Hey, Robert and Linda. This is Tim.
Oh, Token Tim Rinker, of all people.
Indeed.
So what are you up to there, Token Tim? Are you still pushing this weak-kneed, tepid-as-tea marijuana initiative?
Yeah, we've got a meeting coming up here at top of the hour, so I can't talk for too long.
Yeah, you can always call back before 8 if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine you're going to be at City Council. I haven't got the agenda yet, so I'm not sure if it's the evening or the afternoon. I suspect the afternoon.
There is only an afternoon session.
And that's when it'll be. Starting at 2 or starting at 3, do you know?
3.
So to me, it's sort of a non-issue. They will have no choice but to put the marijuana initiative, which got 6,000-plus registered city voters.
Yeah, this is all FUD. Fear, uncertainty, doubt being spread by Barisoni. He basically wrote a letter to the city council at their request, you know, doing his legal opinion, basically. And he kind of on his own claims that parts of it are illegal and this is what the city can do about it, and lays out 6 so-called options.
We actually read this letter on the air last Sunday.
Well, we've got two legal responses.
Let's
that's the thing that the Sentinel's not reporting. even though I believe they were given copies of them.
You want to tell us what your response was? Or?
In a nutshell, it's they don't have 6 options; they have 2 options. One is to put it into law or to put it on the ballot.
Right. They can vote it in or they can pass it on.
Right.
And what attorneys are you working with? And are they local?
We've got various attorneys. One was a response through the Marijuana Policy Project.
Uh-huh.
And one was a firm that a different firm. That we're working with.
That's great.
Well, for those who haven't seen the article, Shanna begins her sensationalist screed by saying, a Santa Cruz police officer would be forced to crack down on littering before arresting someone for selling pot to an adult in a private parking lot if a ballot measure to make marijuana crimes the lowest priority for police becomes law. True or false, Tim Rinker?
Mm-hmm. Well,
He's hedging. I hear silence at the end there.
I don't think it's a phony question because the police don't do bend over stuff. They will call the Parks and Rec and sick those guys who are understaffed on the litterer in the first place, and they'll do something totally illegal if they see somebody toking, no matter what the law says. Hopefully that'll change soon.
Well, I do know that we specifically put in private adult use.
Right, but that
because people didn't want to see it out in public.
Well, let's
and
see. So you think Barisoni and Shanna are, shall we say, wrong in this interpretation?
I think at the very least they're really blowing things out of proportion. I mean, personally, I wouldn't care.
Right.
Victimless crime versus littering. I would still say enforce the littering over it, But I got the papers and legal response kind of late. So this was something I asked about because it was my impression that, you know, private meant indoors as opposed to simply private property. But you know, be that as it may, you know, it would also affect things like you know, busting people out on their porch. You know, that's private property, but it's, you know, it could be argued that it's not in public.
Well, you know, the
I'm not sure exactly how that legally stands.
Well, the problem we have here, Tim, is that first of all, this doesn't mean diddly squat until the state law changes. Really, you know, it seems to me,
Legally,
but putting something like that from an alleged attorney's brain on the front page of the Sentinel in a town that's pretty hot about this issue and has some extremists.
Oh,
I think that means something.
Oh, yeah. It means this. Oh, yeah, definitely. The city attorney is definitely biased, and so is the Sentinel.
No. Now, come on, you guys. I've always
been afraid. They're reinforcing people's fear about something that they have no legitimate reason to make it.
You guys don't seem
fearful
to trust either the police or the Sentinel.
Exactly.
Not in this picture.
My goodness.
But just you watch. Next Tuesday, the city council is going to put it on the ballot. And on election day, it's going to pass. And it's going to pass by higher percentage than anything else.
The question, however, is going to be whether it has much effect on the harassment of marijuana users by the Santa Cruz Police
Department.
Well,
it should. A similar initiative in Seattle
did have such an effect.
Wow.
Yeah, it decreased. We have about five times as many the number of arrests as the city of Seattle. And that's because they've passed a lowest priority initiative.
How many arrests have we had in the last year, Tim?
Well, the numbers are roughly, we had about 250, and they had in the 50-something. That's where I get the 5-to-1 ratio.
Wow, and Seattle, of course, has a million-plus
people.
It's
a real city.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, but they passed the lowest priority initiative.
Well, shouldn't we commend our police department for their militant action against the killer weed?
No, because it's a waste of resources, and they should be concentrating on the violent crime. You know,
right,
I don't have to remind everyone when, you know, people are being shot up, and, you know, those are grabbing headlines too. But you know, just you watch, come November, this thing is going to pass. Even if the impeach Bush thing gets on the ballot, you know, that could pass, but this will pass by even more.
I agree with you. I'm just wondering,
right,
between now and then, you know, and even after then, whether if Seattle is a good example, it would be nice if it follows that practice. But Berkeley passed such a resolution in 1979, and then by 1999, there were felony arrests for small possession of marijuana had tripled, mainly as a tool to eliminate homeless people from Telegraph Avenue, according to council member Chris Worthington. And the city council was not able to stop the police from doing that, even though they already had a law on the ballot. Now, it's true that that law did not contain a specific commission, but I'd like to know, what's the report from Oakland? Has the Oakland commission done diddly squat? Have Oakland bus dropped? What's the story on that? Oakland, this is based on Measure Z passed in Oakland, right, as well as Seattle's measure.
You know who you should talk to is we have a person, a guy who was one of the lawyers for the Oakland Initiative coming down to speak before the city council.
Oh, cool. Well, maybe I'll be able to hear that from him because I've asked that question every time.
Well, you should interview him next Tuesday when he's down here.
I can try it, but every time I've asked you or Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn the same question, I get no answer. So apparently it's okay to just keep giving out the same line about marijuana with new information. I mean, let's get some new info.
I just don't know specifics. I do know, you know, if the Oakland Initiative really wasn't doing diddly squat, you know, some of the people who helped put it on the ballot wouldn't be helping, you know, to do it in other cities.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, one can't. They may think it may be effective for getting some kind of a statewide initiative, which would then have some real legal force, because that's the objective. But you know, it does. I mean, we have to be honest about this.
Hmm?
Right. We have to be honest about this. You know, has the Oakland Initiative had an effect in Oakland? It's been 2 years. It's not too hard to go to Oakland and find out. You know, if you're spending...
If they've had less arrests?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get the stats. I mean, maybe you could find
out at this meeting.
I've asked this question every month, every time I talk to you on the air, Tim. I ask the same question every time I get Andrea on, or every other time I ask the same question. And of course, nobody bothers to answer it.
Well, the organizer who comes down from Oakland, you know, Mickey, she's.
I asked Mickey that question when she was in the studio at one point. She came to the studio, but maybe I didn't. I mean, anyway, I'd like to know the answer.
I've never heard of a complaint saying, oh, they're dragging their feet. No, what I've heard is that, once it passed, even the people that were against it are saying, you know, it's the will of people, and they're going to implement it. That's what I've heard.
In Oakland? I heard that Oakland got stalled for a year because it was badly written. That's what I heard.
That's not what I heard.
Oh, well, maybe
I'm
wrong.
We need to find out if that's true, because I would hate to see that be a reason that so many people
crashed. And one of the things that was brought up by this lawyer for the Oakland Initiative was that the city attorney up in Oakland did challenge a couple of the parts of the Oakland Initiative, but they didn't have to do with... parts that are in this initiative, and the basic lowest priority part of it, they didn't challenge.
Right.
So,
I'm actually looking online to see if I can find anything about it, and I just, you know, I can't. I'm finding stuff about the election day and what the measure said, but not finding much in the way of the actual update. Maybe the Oaksterdam News would be a good source. Mm-hmm. That's like, I guess, is that's under oaksterdamnews.org or something? That's a Oaksterdam, of course, refers to Oakland and the one-time laissez-faire marijuana clubs that used to be around there until the people started clamping down, the local legislators.
Well, I've been hoping to run into you, Robert, because I can show you this... these responses, and they're pretty good.
I'd like to see that too, because I just can't believe people are going to let what Barisoni's office came out with stand. I mean, just ordinary thinking people that are sane, let alone people that know this field a little bit, to the extent one can know it.
No, they're going to put it on the ballot, and you know, Barisoni, I'm sure, would like to see a challenge afterwards. But, you know, it's going to be political suicide. It's, you know, this thing is going to pass, and it's going to pass big. And, you know, they're just not going to have the resources, number one.
I would like to point out that the Oakland Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce opposed the Oakland Marijuana Initiative. And they said this would make Oakland the only city in the entire state of California that does not enforce against marijuana production, distribution, and sales, and therefore would make it a magnet for all people who want to sleep outside. No, I'm sorry, all people who want to smoke marijuana. I was getting a little rotkinized there for a minute. You know, is this the right answer for recovering and improving city services while the economy is still on the mend?
I think that's what you have to expect. I think the Chambers of Commerce can be counted on for saying, we want the status quo, even if there weren't real social issues at stake.
Yeah.
That's going to be their main position.
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce is really going to be unhappy when, tourism increases.
Well, yeah, yeah.
According to the city will be required to spend tax dollars for lobbying statewide and federal legalization of recreational marijuana and use tax dollars to defend this measure if challenged by the state or federal courts. Can you imagine?
No.
It's a matter of sending letters to lobby.
It will be required to establish and staff a citizen committee to oversee the law enforcement policy.
Mm-hmm.
It would the city's ability to
tax. I believe that's all volunteers.
Well, wait a minute.
People that are already on payroll.
Besides, that doesn't have to be cost. Having a system to manage something doesn't have to be, by definition, more expensive than not having a system to manage something.
Right.
That's BS.
Yeah.
This initiative, it provides no resources for enforcement against sales to teenagers and children and the unforeseen consequences associated with a use that has no regulation of city oversight.
What are you reading?
They're implying Oakland was overseeing that before it passed? Overseeing pot use?
Well, there was no... Right. There was the police were marching around, making sure that them people weren't smoking pot in Oakland. Then after it was passed, you know, anarchy reigned.
Well, I think they missed a few neighborhoods.
Well, if you can get me more information on this, I'd love to hear it. I'm looking this over, and there are numerous initiatives in Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz, I guess in Santa Monica. There are initiatives, and of course there are initiatives around medical marijuana in Niles, Missouri, Ferndale.
West Hollywood, you heard about West Hollywood? Because they went to their city council.
And West
they
Hollywood
just
actually passed an advisory measure directly, right?
We can't even we're not even going to get endorsements from most of them, I don't think.
Well, it'd be nice if you actually, you know, if some of those $9,000 you used to run around surveying people was used to actually, you know, get in there and maybe you might have, you know, kicked down a little graft money for the city council there.
Wait a minute. But they're not going to even approve it in their public speech, the council people?
Well, no, they have. You understand? Tim is saying that unlike
they're not going to go out on a limb.
Unlike, well, no, that's not what he's saying. Tim. You're saying West Hollywood approved it by a vote as a law.
Right.
This city council will not even put it on the agenda as a law. They won't even talk about it as a law.
They're gonna put it on the ballot next.
All they will
day.
Do is they'll put it on the ballot because they have to. Right. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the organizers of this measure did not attempt a high-profile campaign to pressure the city council to act on it prior to this, which I think it should have done. And I've talked to you about that before. But, you know.
It wouldn't have done any good. I mean, I hate to say it.
It would have done
a lot
of good. It would have educated.
Even optimistically, you know, my thinking that we could have done that, even with the people that I thought we could have done that with, we couldn't have done that.
No. It would have educated the community, Tim. That's the point. Instead
of
sitting around and trying to play pussyfoot, you're going to have to educate the community anew. You will have less opportunity to educate the community. You're going to have to wait till the initiative hits. I mean, I think you're going to win the initiative, but it's not really the initiative we have to win. We have to win the war against drug prohibition. Mm-hmm. And it's like medical marijuana.
One battle at a time,
I mean,
right?
Come on. What?
One battle at a time.
No, that's a nice slogan.
They are all linked up, but there's always
it depends on the kind of battle that you're doing or not. You know.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, so I'm you know, press on. How can people help if they want to join this quixotic crusade?
Contact Compassion Flower Inn. Come down next Tuesday, 3 o'clock, City Hall.
Right. I mean, I suppose it's good that you get the cops and the city attorney to start acting like complete assholes so that people say, hey, you're acting like assholes. But, you know, the fact of the matter is people are going to be going to jail between now and November and thereafter, you know, and this initiative is not going to do a hell of a lot about that. That's the problem.
But it will afterwards, once it's passed.
Even when it's passed.
No, what it's going to do is help the police department become a little baby step more humane. That's how I see it. But that does maybe give the public wheel a breathing space in which something creative and wise and concerned with our children and the planet could happen.
It's definitely laying the groundwork for larger efforts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know your point of view, and you know my point of view. We know each other's point of view. Let's see. Here's some other points of view. Tim, anything else you want to say? I guess 466-0420 is the number to call if you want to assist in passing this initiative.
Yeah.
And you can also go to City Council 3 o'clock on Tuesday, and that's after going at 4 o'clock on Monday in case you want to check out the police spying situation. That's the Public Safety Committee is meeting then to give the royal We Love You, Howard Scary rah-rah cheer. And I guess there'll be the... You can get a double barrel of all this stuff if you'd like. Also, by the way, on the City Council on Tuesday... I'll take it off the air, Tim. Anything more you want to say?
No.
Alrighty. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Try and get a hold of me before Sunday, and I'll show you some stuff.
Okay. Leave me a message on the Huff line. If anybody wants to reach me, it's 423-HUFF.
Okay. Talk to you later, Robert.
All right, man. Thank
Bye.
You.
Thanks. I have more to say about that. What do we have to do to get the Sentinel to provide equal space on the front page for sane and normal attorneys?
Establish a rival newspaper would be a good approach.
Wow.
And actually, if you want to go through Shanna McCord's article, later in the article, she does go into, she provides the first 8 or 9 paragraphs, or is it 10 or 11 paragraphs, and the front page coverage of the police and the city attorney. But then she quotes Gerald Ullman, professor at Santa Clara, who says the measure is legal. Every community can say where they want police resources allocated. I don't read it as police should close their eyes to marijuana. All they're saying is they don't want their police department to allocate a lot of resources to it. Again, the problem with this kind of statement is, yes, no, not only should they not should they close their eyes to marijuana, they should be actively promoting it in many circumstances as a useful herb. And that's been common knowledge for the last 30 or 40 years. And to have this kind of half-assed approach where you're trying to sort of coddle and mollify the police department and the city attorney, which frankly is sort of the way this initiative is proceeding, trying to, you know, get the most conservative elements on board, or the next to the most conservative elements on board, is not the way to proceed, I don't think. But in regard to what you were saying, Linda, the article in the Sentinel does also give a couple of comments. Says, Barisoni's letter is a conservative interpretation of the measure, said proponent Craig Renarman, sociology prof at UCSC. If the council chooses not to put the marijuana question on the ballot, proponents could sue the city. Marijuana is already the lowest priority in Santa Cruz, Councilmember Mike Rotkin said. Tell it to the police, Mike. We either have to adopt the measure or put it on the ballot. Otherwise, they could take us to court.
Yeah, but you're reading the very end of the article, aren't you, Robert?
The last five paragraphs.
I've read these things before. My beef is not with the particular words and how they're strung in the article, nor even with the author. It's with whoever or whatever force field put that on the front page and is trying to scare people without saying anything real or valid about the herb that they're trying to scare people about. You know, your cops aren't going to be there. And this is the week after we told you the whole West Side is blowing up. You know, there's something wrong with the display here that's dishonest. It isn't about what's going on in town. It's trying to sell its own thing.
Maybe the Sentinel editor will be calling in to defend this. Let's see if we got is this the Sentinel editor on the line, perhaps?
Huh?
You're tuned to Free Radio. Hi.
Hello.
Greetings.
Am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, goodness. Hey. I was just listening to the whole marijuana debate thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I had a slight tactical kind of a question here.
Uh-huh.
All right. So it's the whole deal of going to city council with situations. Now, I personally don't think there's nobody on the city council personally who I think really very adequately represents me.
Well,
I don't feel there's been a strong campaign necessarily to put forth people that are going to be on there. And I see sometimes the going to the city council, in favor with the guide of the initiative process, like going around city council a little bit. I just see sometimes the idea of pressuring them through like mass numbers of people as not being necessarily entirely effective. That they're people that weren't elected by people like us. And they don't really, in a lot of ways, even have the concerns that we do. What's your take on that?
So I agree with you. They weren't elected by people like us, and they don't have the concerns we do. I think, however, that on a number of issues, their failure to take stands that are rational, like marijuana is uh-huh. a typical example, can be used against them. Rotkin and Matthews are running for re-election in November.
Uh-huh.
This next month, by the way, is time for all you people out there to declare your candidacy for the Santa Cruz City Council.
I have a reminder, and Rotkin in the past has been, during campaign seasons, strongly supporting of the use of medical marijuana and how it helps people in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, he has.
I'm
but
saying he needs to be reminded of that if he's campaigning.
Rotkin has talked about changing the zoning laws for marijuana for 5 years and refused to do so. The one thing he did do, of course, is he voted in favor of these two clubs, which have enraged the Harvey West residents because they have laws that essentially ghetto all the clubs into that area.
Uh-huh.
And so, and Rotkin knows this. He was present when the law was voted in. He promised to change the law. He's refused to even mention it. Rotkin is a man on a number of issues who, frankly, cannot be trusted. And
yeah,
I've said that many a time. But, I mean, what your question was, you know, what do you do? What can voters do? What can people do to change these policies? Should we pay any attention at all to the whole city council?
Well, I mean, unless it's one or the other almost for myself. It's like either you need to if you put a lot of effort in and there is a good people that are on the council, then yeah, go to them with your situations. If there isn't anybody on there, then it's really, I think a lot of ways, a lot of pointless energy. goes in there, and it's like you're trying to convince people that really, you know, they'll trick you now and then. They'll be like, oh, we really have your interests at heart. And I think the times that I've been, it's many times they don't. It's just a facade of some sort. And, so I think people are left, going through the initiative process. You know, you can do a protest, I guess, or something, but maybe expose them a little bit. The only thing is, who are you exposing? I guess a sentinel occasionally, carry alternative points of view.
But the point is, I think, I mean, you know, you can actually force change through mass action. I mean, you really can. If you sit in Dick Wilson's office, for example, with a specific demand, he may not want an arrest of 50 people.
Peaceful
protesters. You know, particularly if he's on the wrong end of it. If the city council, if you bring the record of, you know, five times as many marijuana arrests in Santa Cruz, if the previous speaker's, previous caller's testimony is accurate, to the jail or sit in the offices of Sheriff Mark Tracy and say, you will damn well change this policy, or we're going to stay here and you can arrest all of us.
Yeah.
You know, that could have an impact because it's embarrassing to have these issues. But, you know, you're, it's also true if you went to the city council and a bunch of people have said, not only do we want this measure, you know, favorably dealt with the city council, we want you to pass it tonight by an emergency measure because we don't want to wait 5 months while the police department and conservative real estate interests lobby against it.
Well,
we're not interested in that shit.
Pot is one issue that the city council is a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, there's such a wide, like, Santa Cruz seems like on this liberal side, like, it is, like, everybody is in favor of pot. It's a pretty huge number of people. And, but other issues, I guess, you know, the homeless, the police spying thing, the downtown ordinances, you know, all these, like, things that it seems like, from what I've seen personally, like, going to the city council is just, like, you know, it's a waste of time, and you just feel like really disempowered. And I don't know, like, what do you think it makes a difference?
I actually brought up the same issue at our rump meeting of Huff yesterday, where I said, you know, it might be better to go to the Chamber of Commerce, frankly.
Huff's rump.
You know, take our rumps to the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, back in 2002, former CEO of what, Coast Commercial Bank, Mike Schmidt.
Uh-huh.
He had a religious conversion, and he became an opponent of the sleeping ban.
Yeah.
And he went around.
Then they sent him away.
He went around to all kinds of groups and effectively lobbied conservative people, explaining to them how stupid and cruel this law was and how counterproductive.
Yeah.
And he actually, I think, persuaded a lot of people and had a lot of impact. A lot of people didn't like Schmidt because of his other views.
Uh-huh.
But on this issue, he was right on and did a lot more than a lot of other people. So there are other forums to go to and other things to do. Why mention the city council? That's a very good question. I mean, probably because, you know, we're stuck in the same ruts here on this show. Give us some new ruts to move into, if you don't mind. Some new visions, caller.
Okay, well, so I'll definitely be voting for you in the next election, okay? Just let that be known right now.
Well, hey, you know, I am the Fuhrer, and I will run things better.
I like to build on that just a little bit. Having run for city council and failed from getting elected,
you know, I'm going to take any more you want to say, caller, we'll take it off there so I can get another call.
I said my piece.
Okay. Go ahead, Linda.
I want to talk to the people who I see around me as leaders who are often younger people these days because I'm getting old, I guess. But they have all those skills and they're comfortable in them. And I just want to say what you have to develop capacity for is not to take bullshit personally. You know, don't let something really get through your egos and hurt your soul unless you really have your own shame about it. Because people say anything. I saw this otherwise seemingly sane guy literally spraying spit in the face of Celia Scott over nothing, but it was a nothing he was excited about. That's what people who get elected have to deal with. And it's real intense getting elected. I was told once by former Mayor Jane Weed that if you can get through the campaigning, the job by comparison is easy. So I want to encourage people who might not think they've been around enough blocks in town to be good at that to try it on, check it out. I mean, there's money, but if you're all the way poor, you can't even get around most of that. Money issues.
You're listening to Linda LeMaster and, of course, Uncle Robert here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number is 427-3772. Here's a blurb from the Oaksterdam News about Measure Z progress, since we're talking about these measures that are really kind of a way of trying to get a state measure to tax and regulate recreational marijuana use for adults in private, I guess it is. The Oakland Cannabis Regulation and Revenue Ordinance Oversight Committee, which I guess a similar such committee is proposed in Santa Cruz, heard from Police Chief Wayne Tucker in Oakland at their April 20th meeting, 420. The chief answered questions about cannabis arrest stats and Measure Z implementation issues. Measure Z was a 2004 voter mandate that made private adult cannabis sales, cultivation, and use the city law enforcement's lowest priority and put the city on record in favor of taxing and regulating cannabis as soon as possible under state law. Data show, however, that the Oakland Coliseum is not a friendly place for cannabis consumers, while alcohol, a more dangerous recreational drug, is sold and heavily used there. The chief said that he saw taxing and regulating cannabis as workable and agreed with the committee that a change in state law was urgently needed. This is the chief of police of Oakland, Jerry Brownland. I'm impressed. Lieutenant Peter Sarna said that the OPD had already made cannabis offenses the lowest priority before Measure Z, this is what Rotkin claims is true in Santa Cruz, became law because of limited resources and more serious crime problems. Now, however, of course, they're being surveilled by the citizens. What a change. At its May meeting, the committee voted to issue a report on the meaning of private as it applies to cannabis sales, cultivation, and use on the regulation and revenue ordinance. Vice Chair James Anthony suggested using alcohol laws as a model, noting the difference between public and private alcohol use and sales. Hmm. A subcommittee will draft the report for the June 15th meeting. It meets the third Thursday of every month, 6 p.m. at the Oakland City Hall. That's in the Oaksterdam News of July 21st. That's online. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Linda. We aren't smoking up, we promise.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, with another war on the horizon here.
On the horizon? It's blowing us all up, man.
U.S. involvement possible. It looks like Fight Back Productions is on top of the affairs of the world.
Fight Back
Productions, your local theater company.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas Nutcracker Nick here, and we're going to be doing our show concerning anti-war protests and what the authorities do about them locally.
When is that going to be, Nick?
That's wonderful.
That's going to be on the 27th, next Thursday, and on the 29th, Saturday, at 8 p.m. at the Broadway Playhouse.
And where is that?
That's near Ocean, where Broadway Hill comes down to Ocean. It's at the Santa Cruz Art League.
That's right across from the Resource Center for
Inaction.
Yeah,
right across, yeah, exactly.
Right.
I've got a special request.
Go for it.
And what we'd like to do as people come into the theater is play a reprise of anti-war songs and peace songs and love songs from the 60s and early 70s. And so people who have those old songs by The Doors, The Beatles, The Youngbloods, Joan Baez, Peter, Paul, and Mary, all that stuff, we'd like to compile our own CD of it.
Mm-hmm.
If people could volunteer, just get in touch with us if they have those old albums. You know, we'd like to do some knockoffs for
our
show.
I recommend you actually contact Free Radio, because actually the next broadcaster, Uncle Dennis, has a 3-hour show that consists entirely of 60s music. So you might want to call into his show, which starts at 8 o'clock.
And he does good stuff from The Doors to The Dead.
And you might also want to call the Free Radio voicemail line at 427-4523, and tell them that you would like somebody from the studio to maybe put together a mix for you, and they might be willing to do it.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll just give out our number anyway, because people want to volunteer. They might have something unusual. It's 234-2067.
234-2067.
I'll repeat it. Fight Back Productions, 234-2067.
Uh-huh. Now, actually, what I'm going to be doing, and I've actually mentioned this to you before, Nick, is I, of course, have numerous interviews with David Jacobs, Robert Flory, Linda Edwards, Joe Selinsky, and the other activists the real people whose activities your play then becomes a sort of a fictional account of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I may be playing some of that on Free Radio. We also have photos, many photos, of the protests at the town clock in 1991 when There were, of course, there was a massive takeover of the freeways, and in the ensuing months ahead, not only was the protest concerned about stopping the first Bush's Iraqi war, which was over pretty quick, and they bulldozed a lot of those Iraqi soldiers in that one, but it also was a protest against the police reaction to homeless protesters who stayed at the town clock. And month after month, maintained a vigil to try to get justice for people here in Santa Cruz.
Well, that's one of the big themes in our play, is the right of people of any economic level, including homeless people. Two of the characters obviously are homeless. And their right to have free expression of opinion, just like any other American. That's definitely one of the things we deal with, and the police brutality and everything. It's all in this play.
That's great, and I think we'll do a little historical background just to make sure you don't falsify history, Mr. Playwright.
So you're going to see it, huh?
Yeah, it's on the 27th and 29th at 8 p.m.
We'll expect the cast to crowd into the studio for a special gala radio performance.
And it's a benefit for outreach to military people who want to get out of the military, conscientious objectors. Doing a benefit for that group connected with the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And
sounds
the
good.
Prices are very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Can I mention them?
Sure.
$650 for students, disabled people, and seniors. $850 for general admission.
Again, that's Thursday the 27th, Saturday the 29th, 8 o'clock, Broadway Playhouse, right across from the Resource Center for Inaction. Yes.
That is a real deal in this town.
Okay.
And you can give a call again to Nick if you've got some 60s music and some anti-war music that
I'll
might be appropriate.
I'll definitely talk with Dr. Dennis.
Don't forget that we have a war going on now, which is also perhaps a little more current than the earlier war. Perhaps we'll remember one by looking at the other.
Yeah, I think this current war preempts our breathing. We're not supposed to draw deep breaths.
234-2067, if I'm not mistaken, is your number?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, pal.
Thanks, Nick.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 427-3772, on the other hand, is the number you can call in to talk to Linda and Robert. Exercise your right to speech, as I'm about to do by playing a couple of interviews here from downtown.
Before, I was in the county building this week on the second floor where the elections department is, and I think the DA, and I walked over to the right coming out of the elevator, and then another right turn, and on the wall to my left, you know, they have arches, and often there are displays on the walls of 701 Ocean of employees' works. A guy has a bunch of photographs up, and they're really neat. And the middle one is a picture of resetting the town clock after the earthquake, and it has a real young-looking Gary Patton at the microphone in a band. And in the foreground, squatting along the clock, there's a bunch of signs and a bunch of homeless people, and right in the middle is Jay Green, who, you know, Robert, is long gone, but who was like a captain in a very important chapter of that movement.
Indeed. And you actually made a collage of such things yourself when you've done some displays in the past, and perhaps we can get those available for the performance coming up on the 27th and the 29th.
Yeah.
About 1:30 on the 19th of July, downtown Santa Cruz, 2006, in front of New Leaf Market, talking with
D. Roger, etc.
D. Roger, you're on your bike. Usually, when one tries to get the update on the latest peregrinations of the veterans and their attempt to regain sovereignty or at least some control over the vets hall, I get the, it's in the works, I can't talk, we have nothing to say about this, talk to me later, and other Larry-ish type comments. But now, we're going to get the whole story. What's the deal, Roger?
Okay, the deal is, let's deal with an issue that we can actually specify something right now. Usually you ask me, have I seen homeless people having problems?
No, I ask you what...
Really, I ask you about the vets hall and what's going on with Tim Bratton and the vets' response.
Tim apparently is a controversial figure.
Yes, that's probably true.
Now,
Tim is a very controversial figure, but that is because he's the front man for a controversial so-called organization that amounts to just a clique that pretends that it represents all the veterans in the county. But just like the county board, the citizens got to vote on who could be a member. The veterans don't get to vote on who's the members of the so-called Board of Trustees of the Hall.
Now, there has been some concern in the past that, that what have been the concerns about Tim in the past? Have these been rectified by either Tim or by the vets?
No, I would not say they've been satisfactorily rectified.
Concerns have been.
I would dare say there's much collusion between a few cliques, and there's ringing.
What are the concerns? I want to get this again. Most people don't remember, or they don't understand.
The concerns are very simple: misappropriation of premises, misappropriation of funds, abuse of elder veterans and other people. Just basically,
a restraining order against
Robert Hutchinson Jr.
as well as Jim Purcell.
And I understand Robert Hutchinson Jr. wrote a letter to the National Judge Advocate of the American Legion, and they're looking into was there violations of due process. And I believe there were, but since it's a case in controversy that the National of the American Legion is looking into, I'm not going to comment at this time. But now there is an urgent issue happening locally. God dang, I'm just trying to slip in here.
Go ahead.
I met a man here locally on the street that showed me his paperwork. He's right now on 1 year probation, conditional sentence for obscene language. Wendy, the bicycle cop, wrote him the ticket. And I mean, I don't say tickets never happen or no one uses obscene language. And I understand the charge disturbing a peace. I'd never seen before that a man would get 1 year conditional sentence for obscene language in the so-called land of free speech. That if free speech is to work, then even if we're offended at someone's language, then he has a...
Did he tell you what the circumstances were?
Yes, he did.
And what were they?
He claims, and I wasn't there to say it, so I'm saying this is his side of the story, a car came and nearly hit him, and he called the driver a lesbian and talked negatively about her driving ability.
Oh, hate crime language, eh?
In the land of free speech, what are the forbidden words? We all need to know what is the word we can't say so we don't all get arrested for obscene language.
Shut up, you nigger lover.
I mean, is that one of the forbidden words?
I would say so.
Okay, well, in any case, as an alumnus of Peninsula University School of Law here in California, and basically otherwise having studied law for a number of years, to me I find it almost unfathomable that a person can have a citation for obscene language.
Actually,
even if you use obscene language...
Right, right. We understand your concern about
that. And I'm saying you want to know what's happening on the street.
Right. And I want to point out another word that is considered to be forbidden. Last week at City Council, Vice Mayor Emily Riley interrupted Bernard Klitzner at the microphone in a discussion of whether City Attorney John Barisoni's contract should be renewed when Klitzner committed the foul and obscene mistake of describing Barisoni as incompetent. He was immediately interrupted, and this was called a personal attack by Vice Mayor Riley. So let us put it this way. There is a wide range of words which you should be awfully cautious about using, particularly at the public microphone.
Right, and it appears to me this. If the vice mayor uses the word or the city attorney uses the word, Wendy or other police don't arrest them for obscene language.
Officer Wendy Bond.
Right. But if some penniless street urchin uses foul language, that's the only time I've ever seen it, is the guy who showed it.
But it has to be said that John Maurer, with his fuck the pig sign in response to police abuse, after being arrested, is about to receive $5,000.
Well, that's great. Maybe this guy can likewise file a suit. You won $5,000 for false arrest once.
$2,500 for the attorney.
Well, that's still winning $5,000.
Well, actually,
the
attorneys in the Maurer case are winning $25,000.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's great. And who do they collect it from?
City Attorney John Barisoni.
Well, actually, through the city attorney. So everybody in town is paying 50 cents apiece to whoever just won the $25,000 case.
Well,
sounds like mismanagement of the local government.
No, you're not calling the Barisoni incompetent, are you?
Oh, I'd be cautious not to do that until I had a high enough position to authorize myself to use such language.
Very good. Thank you, Roger, etc.
Talking with the Al.
And Al, what's cooking?
And what's cooking is the Dream Man. It got sold off for $40 million by the city. The city bought the Dream Man.
Coast Hotel.
We got it right here.
Right.
The thing is, it was scammed us because they were supposed to pay their taxes, and they worked it around when they gave the $40 million to the guy, and he ran off with the money, and that was it. Checkout time. Don't have to pay the $180,000 a year for the taxes.
Hey.
So figured out with one of the little scams of the motel, so the people who owned it could run with their lives without paying the taxes. So that was one of the things that happened. They got it right in time, and they made a Goshen into a city.
You have a copy of Coastal Homes in your hand. What is that Coastal Homes magazine? What's that about?
Oh, just a lot of realty and everything over high price.
Not related to this particular issue.
Nothing.
Now, have you been following this issue yourself a lot?
I just know what's happening with the city and stuff like that. And then a new skateboard park would be getting built near the river. That's costing $10 million. And the thing is about the whole damn thing about it, that they're laying off workers to keep the project because the engineers say we want our money.
So how many workers, you know, have been laid off?
They started with Park and Recreation, so there's a lot of people who are working for the city got laid off in the last week or so. I'd say about 10 people so far. Notices every 2 weeks on one person or another person or another person, and you can add that up to whatever the city.
You should call a police officer. I see a dog walking on Pacific Avenue over there. Do something about that, could you?
Oh, I hear you.
A criminal pooch. You got to watch out for those. I'm sorry. There was a crime in progress, so I had to stop you. Go ahead.
Rob. Yes. So anyway, it's just a lot of things like that, and the people are getting laid off in their homes and getting unemployment now.
So what's the problem? Those who have money will keep it. Those who don't won't get it. What's the problem, my boy?
They're going to collect unemployment. They're laid off.
I see. So what we do is cut off unemployment on these people and send them possibly to the Philippines.
Hey, by the way, I got my housing authority. But when I went to the meeting for 200 people that showed up for my voucher, how come I was the only white and I had to speak Spanish? I don't understand why I had to. They said we don't have an English interpreter. What's going on with the vouchers today? When I went to my meeting?
Have they reinstated Section 8?
Yeah, well, no, I got mine. I waited 4 or 5 years for it, but how come I was the only white guy sticking out of 200? Something's wrong, guys. And I had to speak Spanish.
We will consider that. Okay, we're talking to a man who's recently gotten out of the hospital, Congo Ray. Your left arm, your right arm?
Yeah, my left arm. Where it was on Monday, it had been 2 weeks where I went into surgery, and when I got stabbed, they got an artery, and so I went into surgery. I almost died on the way to the hospital in the ambulance. I could feel myself going out. And I lost a pint and a half of blood. Now, this man tried to steal my bike. And I caught him, and he pulled a knife on me.
African-American man?
African-American man. And from what I know, it's into the crack shit. But anyway, that has nothing to do with it. Over $20 bicycle, the man is going to stab me is wrong. I don't give a shit where he comes from. And so I'm ashamed. I mean, that this is coming to this around here. I've been a good man.
Yeah.
I've been a chief cook for the veterans for 1,000 hours out of my heart. I cook 70 meals a day for 3 days a week for no money for the veterans for a year and a half.
So this stabbing happened, I guess I got there shortly after at the Ultramed.
Yes, it was. And then I had surgery on a Monday night, and this guy got out of jail. I don't know how, but they charged him, the cops did.
Were you also charged?
No. I was attacked. And so they charged him with assault with a deadly weapon. He was out of jail before I was out of the hospital.
So he's now on the street again?
Yes, and
I
see him
around. First assault, as far as you know, or has he done this before? What's your any sense?
I have no idea what the man's record is, and my kid doesn't start any rumors.
Good for you. Now, you said that you were also incautious enough to call this guy a nigger.
Well, I say when somebody...
Or passionate enough.
And I have a lot of black friends. I mean, I respect black friends. You know, when somebody tries to rob you and then pulls a knife on you and tries to kill you.
He tried to rob you initially?
Yes, pulled a knife right around my bike. And it's only a $30 bike. You're going to
have kind of a beat-up old white Schwinn bike here.
And, you know, it's not the $30 bike. Maybe I was wrong for trying to protect my little bit that I have. But it's also wrong to pull a knife and try to kill somebody with it. And
have you seen Cisco since?
Oh, yeah. I seen him out. He was out before I got out of the hospital.
You two haven't had any conversation with each other since?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Did he have a stay-away order from you?
I'm going to follow this up. Right. I just let the lines have been drawn, and they're on my arm.
Right. You've shown me there are rather serious stitches on both sides of your arm.
I had 50 staples,
and when they each one of them pulled out, it hurt like hell. And I felt sorry for the nurse because she apologized to me, and she pulled each staple out of it because I got a little infection in there, and that it hurt, and she knew it was killing me. But I told her I didn't hurt too bad out in the end.
Mr. Stoic. So, a lot of stuff in the papers, Ray, about shootings and assaults recently.
Yeah, it's a weird energy.
What's it about?
I think every once in a while there's a weird energy that comes through town, and you can actually feel it. Like, I feel like we're almost on the brink of the Third World War here, and I'll kind of, you know, listening to talk radio drives me nuts. But I've known Robert here for a long time, and I've seen him
in person.
That's right. And, personally helping people with the instructions in court. And personally, he's helped me before. And I appreciate his energy very much.
And I'm not paying him, folks, for that latest comment.
That's the truth.
We've been talking with...
Anyway, thank God I'm alive, and thank God this old man can fight, because what if...
How old are you?
I'll be 60 Christmas Day.
Wow.
So actually, he stabbed Santa Claus. And so...
or Jesus.
Thank God. No, I'm not. I'll go there. But thank God I can. My father taught me how to defend myself, and I'm a wrestler from Santa Clara, and so on and so forth. And I can still defend myself, because if a 60-year-old man were to be run across by that guy with the knife, probably would have killed him if I wasn't as strong enough to defend myself.
Now, I've heard some rumors about crack use a lot in Laurel Park.
Actually congregated down by the those two bars down there on those corners. And I really try to mind my own business, and I don't care what other people do. When they come out and stepping on my blue suede shoes, then I will defend myself. I have a family. I have my son and my two grandchildren, and I don't care who gets in the way. I will defend them with my entire life until my day is done.
Well, let's hope it's a long one, and I hope this doesn't happen again. And if I see Cisco, I'll try to interview him on the subject as well.
Yeah, well, he's going to have his side of the story, too. But you know me for years, and you know I don't cheat anyone. I've saved 39 people's lives, 12 in this town, 9 documented.
That was in the fire situation?
Yes.
Thank you, Congo Ray.
God bless you guys, and I love you.
All right, man. Take care of that arm. He has something to add.
I could use some help getting through the month, and right now I have a motorhome. It's on private property, but things will be changing, and I could use some help. Right now I cannot work, and if somebody cares like helping me, they could call me at 457-8657. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ray.
So it's about 5:05 in the police station after having retrieved my own records. Cosmic Chris here is looking for his tags, which he says were taken from his vehicle. He's on the phone requesting the dispatcher contact Officer Headley, as suggested by the person on duty behind the glass window. So bathroom is right there.
So, Chris, you've shown me 2 citations, for one for false tags, one for no tags, from, 1 o'clock today?
Both from Officer Headley at 105. Officer Headley, badge number 170.
And you also have here a document which indicates that your vehicle is registered until 2007 in March.
Right. Issued on 14th.
Right.
So the tags were displayed. I put them on there.
So, Officer Headley, where was your vehicle parked?
Parked right by the Holy Cross Church. Mm-hmm. Officer Headley's out to get me, apparently. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any evidence to support any other positive.
Have you had any previous problems with Officer Headley?
Yeah, I have a lot of tickets that I just had to pay off. I sold my Martin guitar to pay off the tickets that Officer Headley and a few others have written me over
the
last
ticket you got from Headley before these two?
I don't have them with me, but it wasn't too long ago, I'll say that.
What were they?
All for the same thing, no registration. Now, the earlier ones were legitimate, so I sold my $1,700 guitar for $550 to pay that and get legitimate registration and insurance. And now, on a Wednesday, Officer Headley comes by and writes me these 2 tickets while simultaneously somebody's scraping off the tags on my plates.
So, And, of course, we're here, and you didn't feel too comfortable waiting for Officer Headley to show up here.
I'm nervous. I don't want to disappear.
Right. And, of course, I'm here. I don't know if Headley is still on or not at this time of day.
He is, but they don't know where he is.
Because he could presumably withdraw these citations himself, you know.
Could he?
I believe so.
I didn't know that. Well, he needs to do that.
Right. I believe he could.
But I'm afraid to talk to him. Last time I talked to the police, they handcuffed me and charged me with felony concealed weapons charge.
And, tell me, you want to tell me a little bit about that? Was that this?
I was coming back from the DMV at first attempt to find out what it would cost to take care of these registration problems.
This was recently? Or?
Yeah, a couple weeks back, maybe 3 weeks ago. And Deputy Sheriff Cassingham arrested me for a concealed weapon for a luthier's knife I had inside my jeans because it was flopping around.
What exactly is a luthier's knife?
It's for repairing guitars and musical instruments. And this one I also happened to use to change the tires on my bike. But so I still have a hearing coming on that on the 2nd.
You were taken to jail?
Oh, yeah. They handcuffed me and put me in the back of the car until I was sweating profusely and both my hands were numb, despite my requests for her to even loosen the handcuffs one notch.
So the female officer arrested you?
Yeah, and she said she was searching me and handcuffing me for her own safety. But the truth was, after she got me handcuffed, even though they couldn't find anything else to arrest me for, after the second search by the other officer, some guy, I was thrown in the car and left there, and then taken down into the jail and charged with felony concealed weapons for a guitar tool that I told them was a guitar tool, but they said it looked like a sword to them, so they arrested me, charged me with a felony so that I'd have a bail that I couldn't get out on my own recognizance. And then when I went to court...
How long were you in jail?
They kept me until a friend of mine actually bailed me out. It was $5,000. It cost them $500 of their own money lost to get me free. And when I went to court, it had already been reduced to a misdemeanor, so there never was a felony as far as I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is a chapel.
So the officer hasn't shown up yet, huh?
I know, but there's another officer here who's he's the only one that's ever been courted.
So we're still waiting outside the Santa Cruz Police Department in hopes that Chris's tickets can be dealt with. Chris's legal name is Okienitz, O-K-I-E-N-I-T-Z.
And actually, that's not accurate. The officer actually wrote the wrong name for Cosmic Chris on his citations. I don't actually have his last name, but I will be hopefully getting it at a future show. Chris is a street performer who was involved with the original SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Discussion, Expression, sorry, which meets every Wednesday night. It had its 129th week of performing in front of New Leaf Market, in spite of the downtown ordinances, ignoring the repressive laws that were instituted by the merchants to actually go after the homeless, but also caught up street performers as well. And Cosmic Chris is not normally a performer there, but he was part of the original group that was concerned about fighting back against the downtown ordinances, police repression, and the destruction of what had previously been a voluntary system of street performers' guidelines, which were used quite successfully for 22 years after being designed by Jan Luby and Tom Noddy and other performers. Linda, you were back there in those days.
And several merchants. Now, I didn't go to a lot of those meetings, but I talked to Jan as they were happening, and it was really a collaborative effort with good selling work on the part of Jan and Tom, but they had to talk... representatives of the downtown merchants into collaborating to get it in place.
Kind of for a change of pace, I think I'm going to play a bit now of a book that I've been playing selections from mostly on Sunday. I do a longer version of this show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. The book is called Reefer Madness, Sex, Drugs, and Cheap Labor in the American Black Market, by author Eric Schlosser, who also wrote Fast Food Nation. Very interesting book. Those of you who you can pick it up in the public library, at least the audio tape, as soon as I return it, which should be pretty soon because I listened to the whole thing. And I'm playing selections here for you listeners out there. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Phone line, in case you want to call in and comment anything you've heard. Maybe you've had an experience like Cosmic Chris. I'd like to hear about it if you have, and perhaps the community needs to hear about it too. 427-3772. Linda, any comments or thoughts before we go on?
Well, listening to his tip just kept reminding me about how you can be charged in America for things that there's no way all your resources put together, if you had to sell them all at once on the block, could bail you out of, in spite of what they tell us in the Constitution and before, and how much running around and rigmarole you have to do to even avoid having to defend yourself in court. It's just sick. It's exasperating for innocent people with plastic money, and it can be deadly, and it's certainly draining and helps to kill people that don't have any money. I guess I'm not trying to paint out the whole justice system, but most of my experience of most of it is inhumane, cruel and unusual, and not really based in any kind of reality that people you meet could relate to.
Well, we don't need your poor people around here, Linda. There's plenty of opportunities for you to move on to other places. You know, we do have rather expensive oceanfront property here, which other people can pay for.
Yeah, and you can get drop kicked off of if they so want. I know people who were chased out of town by police not that many years ago because of something they happened to see. That was after the John Dine murder.
And an activist, homeless man who lives in his vehicle, spoke to me, gave me a long interview, which his attorney asked I not play on the air because he's still facing criminal charges. But the issue is, he was told exactly that. He was told that 2 weeks ago, to leave town. And apparently, this involves a conspiracy inside the sheriff's office, and it's a serious matter. Mm. And any sheriffs listening, clean up your act, folks, because it's not good. If you want to be put the most favorable light on it, you say you don't want the bad apples to rot the barrel. But actually, the actual reality is the barrel is so rotten already that we need it is an entirely a new system of distribution and a new set of apples and a new way of dealing with the whole scene.
Yeah, and we need to have competence in the administration of these scenes that include agents of the state carrying lethal weapons.
And this incident happened up in Davenport, and is reminds me of Davenport, of course, is the scene near the scene of the Scotts Creek Bluff arrests way back in the 1977 in December, where you actually were involved, Linda. You worked with the IWW at that time, the Industrial Workers of the World.
Yeah, that's the only union I've had any success with.
These were homeless people driven out of Santa Cruz, and I've talked about them on the air before, and it's a famous case because the community of homeless people came together, they fought back, and they actually, in response to their arrests and the seizure of their vehicles, they occupied the county building. I guess it was the basement at that point, wasn't it?
Well, we did occupy the basement, too, but we basically, when they told us, we don't want you here anymore, we were occupying the first floor. We were sitting in a big circle of about, I think, 35 people as the people who worked there were leaving at the end of their workday. And the police were trying, the sheriffs, I mean, the county police, were just trying to act like everything was normal until 80, 90% of the county workers were gone. Then they locked the doors, they locked us in, and then asked us why we were still there. They started carrying off the most people, like Mike Zaharakis, one by one, plucking the circle. I guess we were supposed to eventually become intimidated or dumbfounded or something. And they put as many as they could in jail. We had cloistered a few, basically mothers and small children, on Laurel Street, where there's now somebody's
computer
small-scale computer stuff. Across from Loud Nelson Center, which wasn't up and running yet then.
And I guess Ray Glock Grunig, then an attorney, took the case and succeeded in the most extensive jury nullification ruling that I've ever heard of, where how many defendants? 15, 16, 20? I'm not sure.
Well, there were actually two or three trials. And some of them were rather long and ongoing.
They were accused of trespass.
One of the documents had 9 defendants, but that was just one part of the whole action.
I know that, I guess, it was the largest and longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history, according to Ray, up to that point. And I guess you were in court taking notes for some of that, so was I think.
I was a defendant in one case and a witness in the other. And then I got chewed out by the the DA's office because I nodded and said hi to somebody on the jury that I knew. And they tried to get... McAdams was the judge in front of that. He's
Many
now
Faces, McAdams. I remember him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember him, too.
I think he's still on the sitting on the bench.
He's gotten some kind of promotion. He's not here.
Oh, I think you're right, yeah.
But he chided the DA and said... She said hi to me, too. So what's your point? It was really nice. Because the judge knew what the lawyer's point was, but he knew he was being picky-anny. Is that the word?
Picky-un.
Picky-anny.
And penny-anny.
And trying to make something out of nothing.
And so you were found... Everyone was found not guilty, as I remember, except...
Yeah, but... Like in front of the
even though they
City
all,
Hall
even though they
recently.
even though they all admitted their crimes, admitted they'd had trespass, admitted that they had violated the law, the jury refused to find them guilty anyway, of course, which is what juries should be doing every day in these marijuana cases, and they would go
yeah.
away fast.
Much to the credit of Tom Noddy's work in articulating over and over and over to every big or small group of audience, even in the corridors of the county building, which some of us didn't know whether it was legal or not, what jury nullification was. And that was effective, and people were talking about it for a long time.
Jury nullification is the right of the juror to disregard instructions of the judge, to disregard the law, to disregard the DA's arguments, and to use her or his own judgment in deciding not merely if a deciding if a defendant should be essentially put in jail for what they claim the crime is, and that could involve such issues as to whether the law is constitutional, whether the prosecution is being fair, whether the penalties are excessive. Mostly juries are shielded from all these questions, and you're supposed to simply add up the digits and the figure and turn the matter over to the judge for sentencing.
I've never seen a jury, and I worked for years as a paralegal, and I've watched courts a lot longer than that, where the judge actually allowed, in his instructions to his juries, every judge I've heard makes a point of saying something that would seem to make jury nullification obsolete, that would seem to negate or override the juror's responsibility.
You must judge this on the basis of the law, even if you disagree with this, what many judges
yeah.
will tell
a lot of them have
juries.
It down canned, but even I was on a jury and... And we, as all of us, all 12 of us, sent the bailiff or whoever our escort was out to tell the judge we needed a definition. There was a homicide involved. And there's five or six kinds of homicide. And he refused to do it. He wouldn't even cooperate within his framework.
Did you find the homicide guilty? Yeah.
It was a hung jury.
Uh-huh. And this, of course, wasn't just a hung jury. Wasn't this a jury for acquittal, or was it a hung jury at the end of the Scotts Creek Bluff case with when they occupied the county building and their vans were towed away in Davenport and so forth?
There was an acquittal in some parts of it. I can't remember the charges, but they all had to do with trespassing and things that could go with that. And meanwhile, while we were making some significant wins for what we had to work with, in court, and surprising legal people around the West Coast, the homes of the people who were living on tires were being desecrated at Smedley's, a place which is now turning into very fancy, individuating townhouses as we speak.
Smedley's was the towing company? Or?
Yeah, it was, and they had a dirt lot over on Water Street.
North Kearney Tow does a so much better job now.
I don't know if it's better or worse. I noticed that most of the tow companies that you see very often all have tidy deals with the state, using that word in its full meaning.
We should at some time have a real discussion with you and Ray about the Scotts Creek Bluff case, because it's... A lot of the details I have only second and third hand, or I saw them and I forgot them. But this was, according to Ray, the largest misdemeanor case and the most extensive in this county's history in 1978. It involved homeless people winning because they appealed to the conscience of the community. It's really quite a case.
And they did make that appeal out in the streets and byways as well as in court. But a lot of people, I think Tom was among them initially, felt that it wasn't the win that we had hoped for, because basically they got all the legal proceedings cloistered into the courthouse system, where before that, everybody, all the defendants and their families and relatives and other victims who were more incidental to this crackdown, were in a dialogue all the time. And so some people are making that interpretation.
In a dialogue all the time? What are you talking
about? With the public, with people they hadn't met, with people in parking lots at Safeway. Just all over.
Well,
you know?
The trial shouldn't have stopped the dialogue.
But it did. All of us had to be there all the time.
It took up all your energies.
Yeah, for weeks. One part of it was 4 weeks long. And then we were put, many of us were, not all of us, were put on a kind of probation. And we must have spent 2 weeks. That's the part I remember McAdams being a part of. 2 weeks to come up with the probation that both the state or the district attorney and the majority of the defendants would even both agree
to. They put you on DA probation, I think, in response, according to Noddy, your group put the DA on probation. And you
we did.
You said that if the DA or the sheriffs for a year did not harass the people involved, then you would not repeat your sit-in or some such thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. They'd started out the normal, don't do anything illegal, and none of us could agree to that. I mean, you couldn't get from the courthouse to I had a home or where all these people's vehicles were without being at risk of being interpreted as doing something illegal. And so the finer thinkers in that group were saying, oh, we can't agree to that, Your Honor. And it went back and forth, and eventually it was like we wouldn't illegally sit down in the courthouse, in the county building again. And that's a long way from you can't walk this.
But
the
only if there was they didn't harass you on the streets or just seize your vehicles. That's what I understood.
Yeah, that was a part of it too.
There had to be. That was a condition. We're talking with Linda LeMaster, who is the head of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, a city commission, which found there was no magnet effect for cities which eliminated the sleeping ban.
Not that there was no magnet effect. I think that what we talked. I don't know what our finding was. I can't remember right now, Robert. But what we talked about in that committee is how each city, Bakersfield, the same as Santa Cruz, thinks it's so special that their people are all going to run to their city and flood their social services. You know, and since then we've had these surveys from United Way that show that take the whole county into effect, and they have legitimate science behind their surveys, and they prove that this magnet effect is not enough of a factor to impact and change what services are available, you know. But there is, in fact, people who come all the way from San Francisco to Santa Cruz to try to get food stamps because the streets are too hard and there's too many people that have already threatened them to try to get them in the neighborhood they're used to, you know. And that happens now and then. But the way that people talk about the magnet effect, like, we're invaded by outsiders is just untrue. More than half of the people that have applied for the most basic help from the system who are homeless have lived a part of their childhood or a part of their life here. And I thought it was more than, I don't remember the percentage, but I'm pretty sure it's more than a third of those people. Their last full-time job was here in Santa Cruz County, too. When they've applied. So when you think about that and you put it in the context of what you know about how people really are and what's true, you can see that the magnet effect isn't the policymaker or the resource consumer that people that are trying to make stuff up to resist homelessness instead of learning about it to resolve it start thinking like.
Well, I know that the task force to examine the camping ordinance, the city council committee that operated right before your Homeless Issues Task Force, actually specifically found there was no magnet effect after contacting numerous cities that had, for one time or another, in one manner or another, abandoned their sleeping bans. I mentioned this to former mayor and shadow mayor Rotkin on Sunday. Of course, he rejected it out of hand and said that there was a magnet effect, and it's proven by what happened in Santa Cruz in the safe sleeping zones that were declared, that were passed a first reading in 2000 in May before Catherine Byers turned tail. She was then the mayor.
Is that the Elmore Avenue thing?
No.
Okay.
No. Elmore Avenue was the attempt by police officer Jim Howes to lobby Elmore Avenue residents to criminalize parking your vehicle on Elmore Street for more than 2 hours. Now, this was the Safe Sleeping Zones proposal that was sort of a weak-kneed version of the Sleeping Ban Initiative, which you and I and others supported and was pushed by David Silva and Becky Johnson and Bernard Klitzner and others. I think Bob LaMonica was involved. There were two different attempts to do it. But this was actually when the three council members who were elected in 1998, Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, had sort of committed themselves to some modification of the sleeping ban, some elimination or reform.
I remember that.
And Catherine Byers had repeatedly claimed when she was a minority on the city council with Celia Scott in the 90s that she would move to end the sleeping ban or didn't like it and voted against it and so forth. But she changed her mind and just said in her famous quote, "There's just no place for them." That was her famous quote. But her committee, which involved two other council members, Crone and Sugar, did find, they called themselves the task force to examine the camping ordinance, that there was no magnet effect. And that was the same thing I discovered in my research, but that now is persistently and mythologically denied by Councilman Murotkin. And I...
Well, it's not
what
kind
is
of
wrong
a,
with that man?
It's not a passive and casual thing that they found that. It was a lot of hard work by people from different strata or classes who are concerned about this.
Yeah, but they published a report. So what's his problem?
Does he
dispute their report? I mean, he's...
What I'm trying to say is at that time, people like Paul Brindell were active in running with the information that had come from a national survey that included our area, or at least the city, and a lot of other places that totally disproved it in scientific terms. But you don't hear about that. You don't hear about it anywhere. You know, so the people that have that research need to send it out again. And keep talking. Every time there's an election, you're going to have people sliding backwards from anything that it can be compared to reality unless we're eternally vigilant. And it's not just a phrase. It's a necessity. Otherwise, your children won't even be getting public school or libraries. And I realize that that's not necessarily our ideal, but it's better than illiteracy.
Well, you know, I'm trying to look on the internet to see if I can find this old report, and it's doesn't seem to immediately appear, though an old Huff press release does. I did contact Councilmember Rotkin, who you can call 2-420-5023. Tell him to pass the minimum wage raise and not require it to go through a gut-wrenching deal on the ballot. All they knew would need to do is pass it 4-3. And if Rotkin voted in favor of it, he might move along some other timid, nervous Nellies, like Emily Riley, and that would give it a majority.
Saying we're one vote short of passing it in this city?
I'm saying that that Porter and Fitzmaurice were favoring it, and so was Riley. Riley turned tail. If Riley and Rotkin favored it, I think it would pass immediately. Instead, it's going to have to go on the ballot, and it will be a very extensive, although interestingly class-based, fight that's coming up on the minimum wage issue. I did ask Rotkin to give information. I left him a phone message today, actually, and suggested, since he said on the air that there was a magnet effect and the Pottinger guidelines were... Yeah, they said there was a magnet effect. I think he said both, and that the solution proposed by the Pottinger decision in Miami, which is you can't arrest a homeless person or even stop a homeless person for a so-called quality of life violation like camping, unless you have
your ID at hand.
Unless you have a shelter bed available for that homeless person to use, because otherwise you're insisting that they engage in activity that it's essentially life-threatening, saying you can't sleep, for example, because it's illegal to sleep everywhere in Miami, or it was until the Pottinger decision. And he claimed that had now changed, and I asked him for more information, and he quickly turned to another subject. Hmm. So perhaps we can get Slippery Mike.
Well, I don't think the Miami solution should be transplanted to Santa Cruz. That's an even bigger city than this is. But I think we have to get people, and Mike's perfectly capable of it, get people to get honest and look into what they're talking about and not try to use the little, what do you call them in the television land, little... two-second shorts. There's a phrase
bits,
for that.
Blurbs.
Yeah, bits. But there's a phrase.
Anyway, we are...
Sound bites.
We are
sound
babbling
bites.
Away here, and we have missed Reefer Madness. We don't have time to play it, but I will play it probably on Sunday when I come back, assuming I decide to come back in one of these days. Someone else
well,
will have to take
be
over
back.
The show.
someday.
I'll be back.
Even if someone takes over the show, you'll be here, won't you?
Who knows? In any case, there is a city council meeting coming up, and it does have a number of issues on the afternoon agenda, putting on the ballot the marijuana tax and regulate initiative, giving Danette Shoemaker of Parks and Rec the power to close and declare a trespass area any of the green areas in this city, not just parks, but all culverts, grassy areas near bridges.
So finally, they're going to give them some more staff.
and they're going to add two park rangers to help Ranger John Wallace disperse the ne'er-do-wells from the different jurisdictions, so that they won't be sleeping in the parks or in any of the green belt areas, because after all, it's inappropriate for sleeping. An urban environment, as Mike Rutkin used to say, or was it Jane Hokimama, is not appropriate for an urban setting.
But what is appropriate? The people aren't going to just dematerialize.
Well, that's the hope, you see. If we can only get these people to move to, well, how about a cheaper place down south? I hear there's a lot of room in the Zocalo in Mexico City where they're planning lots of marches. The weather is a little warmer down there. But anyway, here's some more interviews from, I'm not quite sure what this next interview is, but let's get surprised and see what we got here in the last 7 minutes.
So you also had your bike confiscated?
Yeah, I think they accused me of stealing it during the time that they arrested me for that.
Actually, this is more of the Cosmic Chris interview.
Your bike in your vehicle and this happened? Or?
By the way, anyways, after I got out on bail, there was no need for a bail because it was a misdemeanor when I hit the courtroom a couple days later.
Uh-huh.
So it was a setup to try to keep me in there for the four-day weekend. I think it was President's Day.
And was that the same time where your bike was taken, or?
Yeah, and they took my bike and accused it of being stolen, searched me for drugs several times, questioned me about where my drugs were hidden. I didn't have any drugs.
Did they warn you, give you a Miranda warning when they did that?
Sort of, but I don't remember the Miranda warning ever.
Meaning you were right to an attorney?
Right, but I don't remember her finishing the Miranda warning. The only thing I remember is that she was standing at the back trunk looking through a really thick book for something to arrest me for. Finally, it was this concealed weapons accusation, which, like I said, started out felony, and then when I went to court, it was really just a misdemeanor.
Now your bike was actually inside. What kind of a vehicle was it that you were driving?
I was riding my bicycle.
Oh, you were riding your bicycle, so you weren't in a car or anything?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, you've also had, last time we interviewed you was about, I guess, 2 months ago, when you were reported that private security police were harassing you in your parked vehicle, your legally parked vehicle, across from the Cafe Bene in the parking lot where the Asian Rose used to be.
Yeah, I wasn't breaking any laws there either.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been harassing me since I was a street performer and stood up for the rights of street performers through the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression and at city council meetings. Ever since then, there's been some sort of a campaign to be rid of me in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And I've been harassed from every angle that I can imagine. And so far, it just continues. And it's killing me. It's breaking me financially. Now I have no guitar, I have no cameras, all my equipment's been sold to cover the cost of survival in the meantime while they're badgering me. And it's been sleep deprivation and all kinds of other stuff, too.
Do you sleep outside?
I sleep with my camper.
And you still got your camper?
They're trying to take that away from me. The officer obviously stole the registration tag off my plate today.
You weren't able to show the officer the proof of registration?
I wasn't there when it happened.
Right.
And I need to babysit my truck or they're going to try to tow it away.
Now,
I need help is what I need is help.
Now, what kind of help are you looking for that we can put out on free radio here?
Legal help. Someone to stop these cops from stealing everything that belongs to me legitimately that I paid for. I have receipts showing registration. Everything's legitimate. They're lying and stealing from me to destroy me. And now they're trying to steal my vehicle under some bullshit of stealing my tabs first and calling it unregistered. Like I said, I have receipts from the DMV.
What you need to do is make an extra copy of all the stuff you have and then post scotch tape it on the back of your vehicle so that there can be no question when
it's... What do you mean, it can't go?
Yeah, sure.
I don't have any change.
Be happy to do that. Anyway, we were talking with...
Cosmic Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Before we leave, it's a We're talking about an arraignment on the charge of what? Evil guitar or a tuning weapon? Or?
No, yeah, it was possession of a concealed dirk and dagger, which whatever that means. I didn't have either one of those things either.
That particular charge. And that's going to be on what date?
That's the day the last charge was playing guitar within 10 feet of a scaffolding. Is that on the books? I had to pay for that one.
What was the charge again?
Playing music within 10 feet of a scaffolding.
Oh, well, maybe they wanted other things happening on the scaffolding.
Years ago. That was when they first started doing the ordinances against artists.
Now, again, the date for this latest charge is...
July 2nd in the morning.
Can't be July 2nd because it's July...
Right, I mean, August
2nd. Okay, August 2nd, we think maybe 8:30 is the arraignment. In the event that people don't make it, because the arraignment often involves simply pleading not
guilty.
They're
in the process of stealing my truck as we speak, so I'm really...
You got to go. So it's August. That's, if you want to come to the arraignment and talk to Chris, it's August 2nd, and probably you can check the calendar for his legal name, which is...
Christopher Kennetts.
Okay.
Talking with, what do you want to call?
So for the purpose of this interview.
The boogeyman.
Okay, boogie. We're here in front of Holy Cross, and it's about 6 in the afternoon. And you said you got an unusual encounter with a highway patrol officer today?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, what happened was I was coming down on Emmeline going to the hospital there. And
what you want for that guitar?
He pulled up. He pulled me over, and he thought I didn't have a seatbelt on, but I had my seatbelt on. When he pulled up, he came up on the driver's side, and he said, "Oh, you got your seatbelt on, you know?" And then he started looking at my windows, and he thought the windows was tinted.
What kind of a car do you have? Or what, how would you describe it?
Cherokee.
Okay, it looks like a pretty nice car.
Mm-hmm.
Is it up to date? Is the registration up to date and such?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was looking for something to ticket you for, you thought? Or what was your analysis of what he was doing?
Oh, I had no clue.
What did he say?
Well, he also, I got fines that I had to pay. My license been suspended. Yes, I know. I was doing something wrong. But
you were driving on a suspended license.
Right. Basically, trying to get to a doctor's interview because I had to get x-ray on my back. Mm-hmm. And
the cop said, what did the cop tell you? Did he give you a ticket for this?
No, he didn't. What he did, he goes, he was like, well, I can make them fines disappear. You know what I mean? Because he had ties with the DA and with the judge and stuff like that. So basically he's saying he can pay my fines off to me. And I asked him, how? And he goes, well, I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. If you give me a name to a drug dealer or you know somebody that has a stolen car, you know what I mean? And I won't write you this ticket. So I just gave him a baloney name. Mm-hmm. So he can let me go. And then another car came up. I think it was undercover. And he was like, well, I'm trying to make friends here with Mr. You Know Who. Mm-hmm. And then
That's what the officer said to the undercover officer?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. And then after that, he just let me on my way.
Now, are you comfortable with this interview being played on the radio, understanding that it's not likely, but it's possible that the police may hear it, and, you know, it's vaguely possible that the cop who stopped you may hear it and then think, oh, he gave me a false name, get him. I mean, that is always a possibility. On the other hand, the community...
I won't drive anymore, that's all.
Okay.
I know, my girlfriend got a license, so he can't pull me over for nothing, you know.
Okay, then I'll be playing this on free radio. And again, we're talking to Boogie?
Yeah, Boogie.
Thanks, Boogie.
You're welcome.
Turning the tape back to slow.
Precious.
And Precious, you're houseless yourself?
Yeah, somewhat.
Kind of live in your vehicle?
Or? No, just live out on the street, see a lot of things.
You're an African woman, Moon?
Yep. But
African American woman?
Yes, but I'd like to know one thing. I've seen a lot of homeless people go to... go to the Dominican hospital,
mm-hmm.
And if they have Santa Cruz Medicare, they get treated like shit. But I was there when this lady came in. I was with her, and they treated her like hell.
Tell me about that. What exactly did they do?
They gave out information that they was not supposed to give out to me, even though I was a friend of hers.
Such as,
I can't really say. I'm going to have to leave it.
What kind of information?
Information about her history, her medical part, a little bit of her medical history. And they didn't want, they refused to give them medicine. Also, I have seen them refuse to give other people treatments for their eyes and send them back home. I'll not catch the bus. There's no bus running. We're not offering them a cab. And then when I went in one time, I have Medi-Cal.
And we'll have to hear more, Precious, next time. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Join me on Sunday for another, well, a longer version, and we'll do more of the same, perhaps continue this interview. Here's some of Reefer Madness, Eric Schlosser's great book. Who knows? Lots of stuff coming up. And coming up now, it's From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. It's worthy tunes. Old tunes that you know, some tunes you may have forgotten, some that you may never even wanted to hear in the first place. Stay tuned.
Certainly don't know how to follow that Dan Burns song with anything resembling humility. You are, of course, listening to Uncle Dennis on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. And, we're here every Thursday night at 8 o'clock with music from the 60s and the 70s. Of course, at 9 o'clock we have the Earth First Update. We have the Brew of the Week coming up here pretty shortly. And then at 10 o'clock, we have Mystery Group, our listener call-in contest. So stay tuned for all of that. And, of course, just stay tuned to Free Radio. Mm-hmm.
soul. You're a liar about it. Going around and crying about it. Everything's a lie about it.